This is the Oil Sand Tech Podcast
with Aaron Shearhart.
The oil sand industry is the largest unconventional oil business in Canada. And on this podcast, we'll be interviewing people who are building products and building services that can improve the oil sands. We tell the story of how to build products and bring them to market. The Oil Sand Tech Podcast. And now, Aaron Shearhart.
Where somebody's holding groceries and they walk up to the back of their minivan and they kick the bumper and the back door opens. Well, that was a makerspace project. That was something that people talked about a problem that they had, socialized it around that community, and ended up becoming something that was relevant to a competitive advantage that Ford has over their competitors.
Really pleased today to introduce Shannon Hoover. He's one of the founders of the Makerspace movement here in Calgary. And so he's currently working on fundraising some money and working on building a project called the Calgary Makerspace. So I'm really happy today to talk about how the implications this has for innovation in the oil and gas industry and really unlocking the creative abilities of Calgarians and Albertans. So Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So tell us about all about the Calgary Maker Space and what your vision is for the future, or what is a makerspace, actually. Maybe we can start from there. So what is a makerspace and what is its impact on the community?
So maybe I'll actually start a little bit earlier. There's something called the Maker Movement, which is basically... it's the idea of bringing individuals and small communities together and empowering them to be able to make things. I guess a few years ago I went to the Maker Fair in San Francisco or San Mateo, and I was blown away by not only that there was really cool, amazing projects that were being created by normal people like you and me, but they did a really good job of showing how things were done. And you couldn't help but, if you were at an event like that, you couldn't help but, when you left, feeling like you wanted to make something. And so it was really inspiring, not only from the perspective of, we have projects that can change the world, but I could make something that could change the world. So my wife and I went to that, and I think that was in 2010, and we came back, and we were thinking, like, why doesn't Calgary have more of this kind of thing going on in our city? We've got a really young city. People from Calgary generally aren't from Calgary. They're from other places. So a lot of the people that, and the city has grown, like doubled the size in 20 years. So a lot of people that have built Calgary, they still live in Calgary. It's got kind of a pioneering culture to it. Open community, collaborative, young, educated, open-minded. A lot of the things that really lend themselves to the maker community. So we came, sort of asking why we don't have some of these facilities or projects running in Calgary. Nobody could give us a good answer. So at a certain point, it just became up to us to make it happen. So we in 2012, we hosted the first Maker Fair. It was really successful. In 2013, we hosted an event called Make Fashion, which is a wearable technology event. We're now in our third year. We've just finished hosting our third year Maker Fair, which has grown 700 the first year, about 2,200 the second year, and about 3,700 the third year. So we've been growing significantly. And same with Make Fashion. We're now coming into our third year, and it's been amazing. We've shown Make Fashion projects in Rome, in Shenzhen, China, in New York, in Orlando, probably about 10 different cities around the world this year. So the success success that we've seen, not only in our community here, but internationally, has been really inspiring. So when we looked at what does Calgary need to make this happen, to kind of develop maker culture further, we saw kind of a severe lack from a production facilities perspective. So Calgary has Proto Space, which is an open maker space. The trouble is it's fairly small, and the governance model that is built around isn't likely to grow much bigger. And it doesn't lend itself for launching businesses out of it. It's great for hobbyists. It's great for coming in and working on your projects. But it's not so good if you want to build a large-scale project, because you can't rent storage space there. You can't. So it's great for one thing, but it's not everything for all people. The other thing that we saw is that when people finish schooling at U of C or at SAIT or ACAD even, that after they're done, they don't have access to the same shop facilities they did when they were at school. So what do? As a student, you've got a great idea. What do? You hope to get hired on by a company that will allow you to be innovative, right? But there's no real ability, unless you've got a huge bank account and a big garage, there's no real ability for you to have access to CNC milling tools, right, or to a large wood shop. So when we looked at that, we saw Calgary had a real kind of need for that kind of a facility. At about the same time, Calgary Arts Development Association approached us and said that they knew other people that were working on developing a space like this. So they found other people that were interested in developing the space. They brought us all together, and that was the kind of the beginning of the Calgary Makerspace project. Now, Makerspace is a facility that has tools that anybody can use with proper training, of course, and anybody can get a membership to come into the space. So it's a couple key components are that it's a space for making things, and it's open to everybody. It's as accessible as possible. So what you want is you want artists in the same room as engineers, as business people, as tinkerers, as innovators. There's the working title for our beginner makerspace we're developing is called Circus, and it's a place for tinkers, tailors, soldiers, and spies. The idea is that you get people with very different ideas and very different domain knowledge together in a room, and what comes out of that is real innovation. Part of the problem we see within corporations is that you get a bunch of like-minded people together. And that's I think that there's a reason that you would wanna have that, but there's also times when you wanna have access to somebody who thinks very differently from you. And that's, I think, really at the heart of maker culture and as a necessary component for success for makerspace. If you come in to a makerspace with an idea to create, like a giant 3D scanner, you may have the knowledge to get yourself 80% there, but that last 20% is going to kill you. In a makerspace, you can find the people that will get you that last 20%, and businesses form out of that. And because of that, we've seen huge successes come out of the maker culture in the last few years. Pebble Watch, they beat everybody to market by years. MakerBot and Formlabs, 3D, they've revolutionized 3D printing. A Square reader, a credit card reader, came out of a makerspace. There's been massive successes, and they come out because they come out of makerspaces because it's a collaborative space where people with different backgrounds can come and innovate and improve their ideas in a community setting.
Yeah, I think that was a really great entrance point here for the discussion. And I was at the Protospace here in Calgary a couple weeks ago and did a course in the weekend just on 3D modeling. And I was talking with one of the guys there, and we were touring around the shop, and he was saying basically the CNC machine. So conventionally, you go to school for 2 years, and then you're proved competent on the machine, and you can get access to it in a commercial setting, so that's your job. You can go to Protospace, and you can have the same access to machinery within a five-day course. And so this is really all about the democratization of tools that allow you to build stuff. And the impact on the oil and gas industry in Alberta, it has the the potential to be explosive, to be revolutionary in the sense that you're taking the tools that currently, let's say, 0.3% of the population actually have access to in terms of going and creating prototypes and creating, building whatever they dream of and putting it into the hands of anyone that would like to actually access it. So something that businesses don't realize today is that the maker movement is actually being incorporated into the manufacturing sector right now. And so, Shannon, maybe you could talk briefly about the experience that Ford has in integrating the makerspace in Detroit into the actual IP machine that is the company.
Yeah, so when TechShop, which is the biggest makerspace company in the world right now, when they were looking to move to Detroit, they started beginning to work with Ford, and Ford came on as a sponsor to them. So Ford basically helped them build the makerspace in Detroit, and what they did is they offered free memberships to their employees to go work in a makerspace. And it was an after-hours kind of quality of life thing because everybody likes to, you know, to express their passions. But what they said is that if you come up with a patentable idea in 3 months, we will give you another 3 months worth of membership to the space. So what they found is that over, I don't know how long of a period, but they're attributing a 20% increase in patentable ideas because of their makerspace partnership. What's really cool is when you go to makerspace. So here's the thing: as a large corporation, your employees are not the smartest people. Let me correct that. Your employees, there's always somebody smarter, right? And if you want to, maybe you will hire some of those smart people. But if they're really smart, they're generally going to go and end up starting their own businesses. So if you want access to those really, really smart people, the place to find them is in a makerspace. So as a large corporation, if you have engineers and you want them to be inspired and to come up with new innovative ideas, then send them to a makerspace. Have them, give them memberships to a makerspace. Have them, they'll go to that space and they will discuss projects that they're working on, obviously not sharing IP, but they'll discuss ideas. And they'll find people in that room that will be able to solve their problems in innovative and very efficient ways. Because the community that you get out of makerspaces is diverse and valuable. In Protospace, for example. So I had an idea to build a large 3D scanner. So my idea was to use low-cost cameras to be able to 3D scan objects, and a lot of the photogrammetry 3D scanner projects out there cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I wanted something that would be more in the $5,000 to $10,000 range, and I thought it could be done, but there's no way I could do that myself. So I went to Protospace and started talking about this idea, and before I knew it, we had a project form, and a few months later we had a working prototype, and we put about $20,000 into it, but it's a fraction of what the competing products in the market are, a fraction of the cost. So we came up with something just by discussing it with a diverse community. We came up with something that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. I mean, it's a long ways from the point where it's a commercially viable product, but it really demonstrates to me the power of makerspaces. Is that you, as somebody with great ideas, you never know 100% of the solution. But if you can go in a space like this where there's very smart people with very diverse backgrounds, you can socialize your ideas around, people will help you get over that hump. I don't know if you've seen the commercial where somebody is holding groceries and they walk up to the back of their minivan and they kick the bumper and the back door opens. Well, that was a makerspace project. That was something that people talked about, a problem that they had, socialized it around that community, and ended up becoming something that was relevant to, it was a competitive advantage that Ford has over their competitors. So yeah, I think accessing Makerspace gives you access to talent that you would not be able to afford on your own.
So I think another element of the Maker community is that it's kind of something where you change the conversation. It's not, you're not looking at things saying, you know, how is this done? You're asking, how can this be done? And I think that that's really powerful when you go from having hundreds to thousands of people that are actually involved in that. And just for example, this 3D scanner, sure, putting $20,000 into building a prototype, but that is a unique prototype for a machine that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, and that if you're going to do that in a corporate setting, you're not looking at $20,000, you're looking at probably something closer to $2 million. Because you're collaborating, you're bringing together skills, and you also learn from building stuff. So in terms of, I guess, skill building within a makerspace, what does it look like in terms of, is there training courses? Like, how do you become proficient with the machinery or the equipment that is there?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, because personally, I have not become very proficient with the equipment that's available in my makerspaces, the spaces that I've been to. Yet, I still benefit from them significantly, like hugely, because that community exists. There's an artist that I work quite closely with, Jeff DeBoer, really, really talented artist. Google him, he makes awesome projects. He's very involved in the maker community, but he's never developed a 3D model, although all of his art projects get 3D modeled. The reason why collaboration is so important is that you don't have to be the expert in everything. In fact, that's the benefit of this, is that you can go into a makerspace, you can learn what you need to know, you can learn enough to know that a CNC machine has these kind of, you know, risks and strengths and, you know, associated with it. You can learn enough about your laser cutters to realize that they're really good for doing one type of project but not another. You realize that 3D printers, you know, aren't everything to all people. 3D printers are really great for a certain type of work, but definitely not great for others. And then what you do is you come up with an idea and you engage the experts in the space. So for this, for the 3D scanning dome that we built, I can weld, but I'm a terrible welder. But we built a geodesic 3D dome, or a geodesic dome. Lots of complex welding, lots of precise measurements. We had one guy model it all, another guy helped with wiring, putting all the cables in it, another guy helped with the building, the manufacturing, the welding. These are things that I would, you know, I could have maybe done them on my own, but it would have been a really terrible project. The benefit of this, of a makerspace, is that you don't have to know everything. Everything is, if you want to learn how to do something, it's available for you to learn. But you don't have to know it. You don't have to become an expert in it to be able to leverage those skills and abilities.
So just talking about moving from a kind of a hobbyist level to a commercial level where you have, you're launching companies actually out of these makerspaces, are there other makerspaces around the world that have been commercially viable as a business?
Yeah, certainly. There's, Tech Shop, again, is a space that both is viable as a business and is successful in creating innovation. Like the square reader came up from a Tech Shop, right? And, I mean, if you need one project that's a project that I don't know what their valuation is now, but it's definitely in the billions, right? This is a fairly new concept, and there's a lot of, there's a lot of different approaches that people are taking to them, but there's makerspaces depending on how you look at them, but there's makerspaces in pretty much every major city in the world by now. In Calgary, we don't have a strong community of it. I should change that. We have a really strong maker community, but it's really invested in the corporate world right now. What I'd like to see is a strong maker community that is accessible to the general public. We have Protospace is a successful makerspace. There are successful projects being launched out of it. The trouble is, it's pretty limited in its reach. We can have a maximum of, we've got 120-ish members right now, and we're kind of bursting at the seams. We can't really support more than that, or we can't and the project won't scale above that, right? So there's successful maker spaces really all over the world. Protospaces' mandate is also a little limited in that they don't do a lot of public outreach. There's courses offered, but they're generally the only people that hear about the courses are members. So you kind of have to be a member. So really they're appealing to a group of 120 as opposed to, you know, the 1.3 million people we have in Calgary. We would like to see makerspaces that can approach the larger public in Calgary.
I think one element that I'd like to kind of briefly discuss as well is the fact that this is an open community and that everyone is kind of welcome to come and join. So my understanding is that this is kind of sprung off from the Silicon Valley method of building, to a large part, building open source software in terms of like into the open source hardware movement. So how or what is the origin of the idea of Makerspace?
Yeah, I think this is really an evolution of the open source movement. You're completely correct. The open source movement is mostly focused on software. I don't know the exact timeline. I can only kind of speak to it as far as I've been engaged with it. But like about 8 years ago or 9 years ago, Make Magazine hosted the first Maker Fair. And since then, they've really kind of led the discussion around maker culture and maker spaces. And probably in the past 4 or 5 years, you've started to see real commercialization come out of the maker space, the maker community. A lot of it has to do with Kickstarter. But you know what it's really about is it's about the democratization of innovation. So, and what I mean by that is in a maker space, a personal belief of mine is if you don't make your makerspace available to as broad a group as possible, you remove the opportunity for certain people to inspire ideas. So you eliminate, like if for example, if you make a makerspace so it costs $1,000 a month to join, that's going to appeal to a very, very specific subset of the population. So our goal is trying to make it as low as possible and in fact subsidize in some areas. We want artists there. There's been stories about homeless people coming to makerspaces and building themselves a new career. You know, everybody has an outlook on life that is insightful to everyone else. So I have a lot of knowledge around wearable technology and a lot of knowledge around hardware development, but I have very little knowledge around, you know, sewing, right? Or I have very little knowledge around plastics and injection molding, very little knowledge around, you know, how to do certain types of community engagement. And these are all things that if you're going to be launching a business, that you need access to knowledge that's outside of your... There's very few people that can do everything by themselves. And, you know, kudos to you if you're one of them, but I certainly am not. I require a community for my ideas to be successful. And to me, a really critical part of a makerspace is ensuring that you've got the most diverse community possible in that space. I want there to be artists sitting next to engineers. We've seen with Make Fashion, for example, we've seen success precisely because of that. What we did is we even artificially connected artists to our designers to engineers. And what came out of those collaborations was really mind-blowing. And there's opportunity there. If you want to start researching something, the best way to do that is to get a group of people with diverse backgrounds to come together and work on it. That's sometimes hard to get. It's hard to get within your own corporation. It's hard to get in communities. But if you can build a space that is attractive to a large group of people as possible, then that community naturally forms.
When you have all these people surrounding the table, so let's just talk in terms of oil and gas innovation. So what is the impact when you have so many diverse people taking a look at kind of a problem that's traditionally taken a look at from one perspective?
Yeah, so my personal experience hasn't been really developing tools for oil and gas, so I may sound a little bit ignorant here, but I work a lot with wearable tech and IoT, right? And I can really see, like, there's sensors that I use in wearable technology, like 9-degree of freedom IMUs, that 6 years ago, a sensor like that would have cost $6,000, and today they cost $9. And so as those types of products become available, I know how to use them, right? Like, I'm familiar with them from the perspective of wearable technology. However, if you are somebody who works in the oil industry and you see a need for somebody to be able to detect, you know, how a tool moves in three-dimensional space, I have really good knowledge around cheap sensors that you could use, right? So you may be looking at this from the perspective of from the perspective of your business. But the most valuable person to you might be somebody that's not at all associated with your business. You may find somebody that is really good with maybe working with fabric. Like, we have somebody she uses a spinning wheel and loom, one of the oldest tools you can have access to. And we're talking with her about building cloth that has fiber optics woven into it, right? So yeah, you can find people in a space like this that just will look at a problem with knowledge that you could not possibly hope to have. And they'll bring understanding, they'll bring enlightenment to your problems in a way you couldn't on your own. So, I mean, there's so much that could be done, even if I were to sit down and talk with somebody about enabling or empowering people working on pipelines or people that are out in the oil patch or doing seismic work. There's solutions that I would have with respect to wearable technology that would likely be very, very cheap and maybe even disruptive to your business. I just don't know the business case because I haven't had exposure to that. So what we should be doing is you and I should be sitting down and brainstorming and talking about what your problems are, and I might have solutions for them. And that's what happens in a makerspace.
And I think that is so powerful, having that divergence of minds and also, I guess, not having that singular focus, you know? I mean, for me, a makerspace is all about learning how to do things, and not necessarily with the intent of, learning for building like a specific thing, but for building that skill set in order to build things. And what that takes, I've never seen the level of curiosity that exists in the makerspace in any other place. And for me, I'm just a very curious person. And so I really find that to be awesome. And as you mentioned, makerspaces are kind of going out to be everywhere. When I just moved back from China, they actually had a small makerspace at one of the technology universities. This is in inland China. This is something that is going to change the way that products are designed worldwide, and it's going to move from a lab where somebody's deciding, a product designer is deciding where people are building products because they need them. And that's the best way in order to have a successful product is because it is from an individual need basis. So just before we kind of finish off here, maybe what is the best way for somebody to get in touch with you if they'd like to get involved with the maker community or they would just like to reach out?
I want to just briefly touch on one of the points you had earlier. You've heard of the Pebble Watch, right? So this was a device that was made by three people at a makerspace from Somerville, Massachusetts. They raised $10 million on Kickstarter. I've met the guys. I've talked to them. You know what? They shut down their campaign at $10 million. It was too successful, and they were afraid they wouldn't be able to fulfill the demand if they left it open. So they artificially shut it down at $10 million. They beat LG, they beat Samsung, they beat Apple, they beat every large hardware manufacturer that is now clamoring to get a smartwatch out to the market. They beat them to the market by 2 years. So how do three guys hanging out in the makerspace do that? How do they make tech companies that have budgets of $1 billion look like absolute fools? So here's the thing. If you can create a space that empowers people's passions, the type of products that you're going to get out of somebody's passions, instead of being driven by shareholder value, right? Nothing wrong with shareholder value, but it's a very, very singular approach to innovation. We want to create, we're only going to look at products that are going to make us money. you miss a lot when you look at problems that way. A makerspace, people are free to look at problems from however they want. And when you can empower individuals or small groups, what you end up with products that are more meaningful, they're more relevant, they're better for communities, they're better for the environment. So you end up with products that impact people's lives in a more positive way. That's, to me, that's the real power of a makerspace. Anyway, if you're looking to find out more about kind of the Maker Faire or the Makerspace project in Calgary, our website is calgarymakerspace.com. We also host the Maker Faire. If you're interested in that, it's makerfaireyyc.ca. And if you're interested in wearable technology, our website there is makefashion.org.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Shannon, for joining me on the podcast today. And, it's just, I don't know, I just get so excited because it's you have the ability. It takes you're 10 years ago, if you want to build a prototype, you're looking at going out, hiring companies, spending $20,000. Today, for $500, you can go join the makerspace here in Calgary, the protospace, even though it is smaller, and you can teach yourself the skills and learn in a diverse environment and come out with probably a better prototype than you could ever, like, communicating just by, you know, one-off. So for me, it's really powerful, and I hope that building the makerspace here is successful because it really is going to be a power for innovation for the city and also for the oil and gas industry. And hopefully people in the oil and gas industry will see that those benefits of it. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of discovering opportunities to improve oil and gas performance in Alberta with a specific focus on the oil sands. If you want to learn more, head to the website of oilsandtech.com. You can check out all older episodes, find businesses that are focused on oil and gas technology in our business directory.